Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Later in the program, we'll hear excerpts from the fiery Democratic debate last night in Las Vegas. The first one featuring billionaire Michael Bloomberg. That's later on in this program. But first up today, we're going to discuss a new film, which will have its premiere tomorrow in St. Petersburg. It's about a group of Quakers from Alabama who were forced to leave the U.S. in the early 1950s because of their anti-war views. Here's the beginning of the film.
Our belief in pacifism is based on the fact that there's a spark of the divine in every person. And under no circumstances should we take the life of another person. When the United States passed their Universal Military Training Act of 1948, it was important to make a statement against militarism.
The Fairholt Four, I call them. These four young guys refused to register.
We were sentenced to a year and a day in prison.
They didn't want to draft into the army, and they got sent to jail for a while.
Because they didn't want war.
And then the judge said to them that if you don't want to be part of this, then you can leave the country.
What they had to do is a really hard choice, leaving your country to a place you've never been.
Our prison sentences terminated on October 27, 1950. So November 4th, we got into our vehicles and started for Costa Rica.
I'm gonna lay down my heaven low. Down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the river. I'm gonna lay down my head low, way down, down by the riverside, study war no more. I ain't gonna study a war no more. Ain't gonna study a war no more. Ain't gonna study.
Maybe it was presumptuous of us, but we just had this feeling inside of us, this is what we must do.
This group of Quakers leaving the United States for conscientious reasons.
I don't think I'd ever heard of Costa Rica.
I didn't really know where Costa Rica was or ever hear of it before.
I guess we just, foolhardy or otherwise, there we were, just burning our bridges.
It all happened so fast.
Costa Rica, they don't have a standing army, it's not a militaristic society.
So that rung a bell in our minds as well.
Let's go create a new vision.
Going out of the country to live somewhere and be pioneers, that sounds pretty exciting when you're young.
Starting all over again, that sounds like it'd be interesting.
Well, that's the opening to the new film, Sweet Home Monteverde, which will have its premiere tomorrow in St. Petersburg at 2 p.m. at the Conference on World Affairs. And the film's director, Robin Truesdale, joins us right now. Her previous films include Cuba's Forgotten Jewels, A Haven in Havana, and A Beautiful Equation, Einstein, Bohr, and Grandmothers. And Robin, welcome to WMNF. Nice to see you.
Hi there. Thanks.
Thank you nice for coming by. So how did you happen to work on this film?
Well, I have a colleague that introduced me to the person who started the film years ago, Bill Adler. He was a resident in Monteverde for 3 years with his family, and he found the story really captivating, and he started filming interviews with some of the founders of the area, and he needed someone to partner with him and do the filmmaking aspect, and that ended up being me.
So this is a group of people who were anti-war when did the draft come in the late 1940s?
Mm-hmm. That's what I think catapulted them to make their move. Four young men in Fairhope, they were Quakers, and they have an anti-war stance, of course, and four of them did go to prison as draft dodgers. One of them had been in World War II, Marvin, and so they just had a strong belief that that wasn't how they wanted to live their lives. And when they got out of prison, they needed to decide what to do after that.
They were Quakers. They came mm-hmm. from a religious perspective.
Right, right. I mean, they have a pacifist philosophy.
How long did they spend in prison?
I believe it ended up being 4 months. They were sentenced to a year and a day, and then they were paroled at 4 months.
And the judge said, well, if you leave the country, you're okay.
He actually said, if you don't like the policies here, you should leave the country.
And so what did they do?
They, a couple of the Quakers had gone searching for a place to relocate in Central America. And they found Costa Rica very inviting and welcoming, and a place that was potential for farming, which is they were farmers and dairy farmers, and they fell in love with it.
How many of them are still alive of the original group that went down?
I'm not sure exactly. A handful. There's four people that appear in the film. Three of them are still living. One of them passed away recently. And they're amazing. They're in their late 80s or 90s. You know, they're just incredible people.
They picked Costa Rica because Costa Rica had eliminated its standing army.
Exactly. Yeah, in 1948, after a bloody civil war in Costa Rica, they got rid of the army and decided to spend more of their finances on education. So their slogan at the time was more teachers than soldiers.
How did that turn out for Costa Rica?
I think it's turned out really well. The people there like the fact that they don't have an army. I mean, you know, it's not a completely nonviolent country, but I think it's good for their community sense.
I never think of Alabama as a hotbed of Quakerism.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I had no exposure to Quakerism before coming into this project, so I don't know really.
So they named this area Monteverde. Does that mean Green Mountain in
mm-hmm,
Spanish?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And tell me, what happened once they got there in the late 1940s or 1950 they went down? What happened?
They actually arrived in early 1951, and they spent the first 3 months of the year in San Jose sort of going out, branching out, trying to find a place to resettle and looking for land. And they ended up choosing Monteverde, which they named. It didn't exist. I mean, it was just a rural area at the time. And it's located up on the top of a mountain in the cloud forest. It's very remote.
And did they set up an intentional community, or what did they do once they got there and went to the mountain?
Well, they had to find a way to get all of their people and belongings up, because there were no roads, and so they would they managed to get there, and then they started building their homes, clearing the land a little bit to start their farming, and they worked with the Costa Ricans that were in the area, so they formed, you know, good relationships with the people there, and they did start a dairy, a cheese factory, and they employed some of the Costa Ricans, and so that was really their mode of income for the first 20 years.
Is the community still there?
Yes, it's very vibrant. I believe, and I'm not sure of the numbers, but I think there's about 100 Quakers who still live there, but it's the area has grown. So what happened is it became an ecotourism area, because one of the wonderful things that I think the Quakers did to the area is they made a preserve. They made an environmental area that was protected, and that area has grown and brought in a lot of ecotourism. So the economy has changed over the last several decades. But, yeah, I think the Quakers have a very wonderful influence on the people.
Did the original group from the Fair Hope, Alabama group, did the original people have kids?
They did, and so what's interesting is their children, you know, grew up sort of coming from an American background, but really as Costa Ricans, and there's the mixing of cultures, and so now I don't know that you could draw a line between American and Costa Ricans in that area, and that's multilingual, the area, it's English is spoken and Spanish is spoken.
Well, we're talking about the new film Sweet Home Monteverde, which traces the journey of nine Quaker families from Fairhope, Alabama, who during the Korean War immigrated to Costa Rica, a country that had just abolished its army. The film's director, Robin Truesdale, is here with us right now, live on WMNF. And the film will have its world premiere tomorrow in St. Petersburg at the Conference on World Affairs at 2 p.m. The screening will take place at the Kate Tiedemann College of Business Auditorium at USF St. Petersburg. That's at 700 4th Street South in St. Petersburg. So the world premiere, St. Petersburg, how did you happen to pick the conference for the world premiere?
Well, I was really fortunate to be here last year for the conference with the with another film that I had worked on. It was a film about Cuba, about Jewish refugees who had gone to Cuba during World War II. And so I had a little bit of a connection there. And I was working, Bill and I have been working on this film now for, well, he's been working on it for 6 years. I've been on the project for three, and I knew it was coming near completion. And I mentioned it to the director before it was even close. And she was wonderfully responsive and said, I think you, it's going to be a great film. Please bring it. So I'm, you know, indebted to her for the confidence.
I want to play another clip from the film. And this set this clip up for us. What are we about to hear?
Well, originally the goal of the film was to just keep the history of the elders of the Quakers. But what happens is, you know, they filter their philosophy down, and the area is an environmental concern because of climate change. And the young people in the area have a lot to say about what's happening. And so we followed up with interviews with some students at the Monteverde Friends School, which is right there. And these are students who are becoming activists against the climate change dilemma that we're facing.
Would it be fair to say that people at Monteverde were some of the first to recognize climate change?
I'm not sure. I couldn't make that determination, but there are a lot of scientists who go there and study. And, it was an early concern, even as early as the 70s.
Well, let's listen to another clip of the film Sweet Home Monteverde right here on WMNF in Tampa.
Recently, we had the climate march here, which I'm really passionate about.
We now had the biggest climate march in Costa Rica.
We can already see the rainy seasons are becoming shorter periods and more like intense rain rather than it spread out, and the dry seasons are becoming drier and there's less cloud cover. And so, you know, as climate change progresses, it's just gonna like get worse and worse.
I think that it's like never gonna be enough unless everybody starts acting.
We need to focus on the earth and where we live, because if we don't and we're just focusing on all of that material stuff, we're not gonna have an earth to live on.
That's part of the film Sweet Home Monteverde, and its director, Robin Truesdale, is here. Robin, are those people that live permanently in Monteverde?
Mm-hmm. They're young people. These are young school-age kids, basically, who have grown up there. And so they really understand what it's like to see their climate changing right in front of their eyes.
So they've noticed the shorter rainy season, but a more intense rainy season, a longer dry season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I, you know, we can take heed from the youth because they're the ones that are going to really create change. I think we all have to be part of the movement, but these young people are really inspiring.
You know, it's interesting, just going back to the founding of Monteverde, the thinking that people drove from Alabama through Mexico, then through Guatemala, and then Honduras and Nicaragua, and then they get down to Costa Rica. In 1951.
I have a great story for you. So Marvin Rockwell is one of the main characters, and this man, he's so funny. He's 90-something now, and he laughs all the time. The guy's just hilarious. I loved him. And one story he tells is when they crossed into Mexico, he and his family members, I believe there were about 10 of them with a couple trucks, and they were camping at a rest stop, and they thought they knew some Spanish. And there was a young boy that they asked him his name, and he said, Kenyo, which means who me, but they just kept calling him Kenyo. They thought that was his name, and it turns out they didn't really know Spanish.
Like, who's on first?
Yeah, they learned it eventually.
So what happens when, I mean, some of the original of the Fairhope group are still alive, but they're, as you said, in their 80s. What happens when they pass away? What will happen to Monteverde?
I think the community's really strong, and of course there's other people there, you know, different generations. And they've created a place that's welcoming, and people love it, even visitors. It'll always attract visitors, scientists, all different types of people, and I think it'll be very strong.
So people that are interested in climate change or peace activism could go to Monteverde today?
I believe so, for sure. And once you go there, you may not want to leave. You might want to return as much as possible.
Did you go down?
I was only there for three days.
What'd you think of it?
A year and a half ago. It was amazing. And I haven't been there in the rainy season. I was there in November when the climate was just gorgeous and very peaceful. Well, lots of bird sounds.
So do you think that Costa Rica will remain committed to not having an army?
I couldn't say for sure, but my feeling is, on the way to the airport, it's a 2-hour drive to San Jose from Monteverde, and I was in a cab, basically, with a man who did not speak any English, and unfortunately, I don't have Spanish in my language either. So we managed to communicate for that 2-hour period, and I really got a sense of pride from him mm-hmm. about his country.
And going back to the late 1940s and early 1950s, could you describe the time for us that in which these people were resisting the draft and saying, we don't believe in the draft, we're Quakers, we're committed to peace? What was the U.S. like back there in the 1940s, late 1940s and early 1950s?
I can only sort of repeat what I've read about it. But, you know, the Korean War was about to happen. The U.S. was about to enter the war. We just come off a few years after World War II. The military-industrial complex was really on the rise. Our tax dollars were really starting to escalate for military purposes. That was their primary concern. It wasn't just the fact that we're going to war. It was the fact that everything contributes to the military. There's no way around it. Taxes. Yeah.
It had to be a pretty fearful time.
I imagine so. Yeah. Mm. I think these people were so brave. And, you know, there is criticism. You know, people can have criticism. Why would you leave your country? Why don't you stay here and fight for what you believe in? And honestly, I think there's a lot of ways to live your conscience. And in hindsight, looking back at what these people did, they created a place that actually does make a difference. It's just making a difference in a unique way.
So have any members of the nine families, do they come back to the U.S.? And what do they say about the U.S. today?
You know, I can't answer that because I haven't talked to them specifically, but I know that family members do live here in the U.S. sometimes. The younger generations will come to the U.S. for education, maybe to go to college. So there's back and forth. They haven't left the United States behind completely.
And what do they say about the U.S. that you haven't really talked to them about?
I didn't. I wish I could. Yeah. Maybe I'll go back and have that conversation.
Well, Robin Truesdale, thanks a lot for coming by WMNF. It's great to have you here. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about the film?
It's a passion, and I'm excited to see what the very first audience has to say about it. I hope it'll be a very positive experience.
Well, the world premiere is tomorrow at the Conference on World Affairs in St. Petersburg at 2 p.m. The screening will take place at the Kate Tiedemann College of Business Auditorium. That's on the USF St. Pete campus, which the auditorium is at 700 4th Street South in St. Petersburg. And Robin, if people want to watch the film, can they go to your website?
We do have a website. It's sweethomemonteverde.com. The film's not available to see, you know, and completed. There's a trailer there. And we will be setting up screenings for interested parties. And we need to recoup some funds so we can help pay our bills. And so public community screenings would be wonderful. It'd be great.
Independent documentary filmmaking is very, very expensive.
It is, but it's a labor of love.
Robin, thanks a lot for coming by WMNF. Great to see you.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa, and we will post a link to the film site on our website in just a few minutes at WMNF.org. Music from Oliver Mitsikudzi. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Well, last night at a contentious and fiery Democratic presidential candidates debate in Las Vegas, the first one featuring billionaire Mike Bloomberg, there was an extensive discussion about democratic socialism, sexism, climate change, and who is best to take on Donald Trump. We're going to hear some excerpts from the debate last night, and then we're going to open up the phone lines. I want to ask you about what you thought of last night's debate, and you can email us here in the studio, dj@wmnf.org. Here are some of the highlights from last night's Democratic debate.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
I actually welcomed Mayor Bloomberg to the stage. I thought that he shouldn't be hiding behind his TV ads. I don't think you look at Donald Trump and say, we need someone richer in the White House.
Let's put forward somebody who actually lives and works in a middle-class neighborhood in an industrial Midwestern city. Let's put forward somebody who's actually a Democrat. Look.
One thing that I'm really worried about, embarrassed about, was how it turned out with Stop and Frisk. It got out of control.
And it's not whether he apologized or not, it's the policy. The policy was abhorrent, and it was, in fact, a violation of every right people have.
I have no tolerance for the kind of behavior that the Me Too movement has exposed. In my foundation, the person that runs it's a woman, 70% of the people there are women. In my company, lots and lots of women have big responsibilities. They get paid exactly the same as men.
And I hope you heard what his defense was. I've been nice to some women. Mr. Mayor, are you willing to release all of those women from those non-disclosure agreements so we can hear their side of the story?
There's agreements between two parties that wanted to keep it quiet. And that's up to them.
We are not going to beat Donald Trump with a man who has who knows how many non-disclosure agreements and the drip, drip, drip of stories of women saying they have been harassed and discriminated against. That's not what we do as Democrats.
Mr. Vice President. I believe in democratic socialism working people, not billionaires.
What a wonderful country we have. The best known socialist in the country happens to be a millionaire with three houses. What did I miss here?
Well, you'll miss that I work in Washington, House 1.
That's the first problem.
Live in Burlington, House 2.
That's good.
And like thousands of other Vermonters, I do have a summer camp. Forgive me for that. But where is your home? Which tax haven have your home?
New York City, thank you very much. Yeah, right, and I pay all my taxes. And I'm happy to do it because I get something for it.
And Mitch McConnell, I've been the object of his affection and the president's affection, the way he's gone after me, this new Republican Party, after me, after my son, after my family. I don't need to be told I'm a friend of Mitch McConnell's. Mitch McConnell has been the biggest pain in my neck in a long, long time.
And that's what we are saying, Pete. Is maybe it's a time for the working class of this country to have a little bit of power in Washington rather than your billionaire campaign contributors.
And if there are a few people who make ugly remarks, who attack trade union leaders, I disown those people. They are not part of our movement.
But leadership is about what you draw out of people. It's what it's about how you inspire people to act.
I have an idea of how we can stop sexism on the internet. We could nominate a woman for candidate for president of the United States.
Mayor Buttigieg really has a slogan that was thought up by his consultants to paper over a thin version of a plan that would leave millions of people unable to afford their health care. It's not a plan, it's a PowerPoint. And Amy's plan is even less. It's like a post-it note, insert plan here. Bernie.
I'm more of a Microsoft Word guy.
I must say, I take personal offense since post-it notes were invented in my state.
But you're staking your candidacy on your Washington experience. You're on the committee that oversees border security. You're on the committee that does trade. You're literally in part of the committee that's overseeing these things. And we're not able to speak to literally the first thing about the politics of the country to ourselves.
Are you trying to say that I'm dumb, or are you mocking me here, Pete?
I'm saying that you shouldn't trivialize that knowledge. I made an error.
People sometimes forget names. He's basically saying that I don't have the experience to be president of the United States. I have passed over 100 bills as a lead Democrat since being in the U.S. Senate. I am the one, not you, that has won statewide in congressional district after congressional district.
But let's just be clear. Missing a name all by itself does not indicate that you do not understand what's going on. And I just think this is unfair.
Some of the excerpts from last night's debate, and towards the end there, we heard Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, Mike Bloomberg, Joe Biden, and Bernie Sanders. And my questions are, who do you think was the best debater? Who was the person that shows that in a future debate, they might be a best counterpuncher? If you're a Democrat, who would you like most to see take on Donald Trump in the November race? And if you're a Republican, which Democrat would you rather run against? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And if you want to weigh in on this, who do you think made the best points during last night's debate? Who do you think won? And who was the best counterpuncher? 813-239-9663. Let's go back. And we heard a clip from this just a moment ago, but let's go back and hear an extended exchange between Elizabeth Warren and Michael Bloomberg about what happened in Bloomberg's company with women. Here's more of last night's debate. Democrats debating right here on WMNF in Tampa.
He has gotten some number of women, dozens, who knows, to sign non-disclosure agreements, both for sexual harassment and for gender discrimination in the workplace. So, Mr. Mayor, are you willing to release all of those women from those non-disclosure agreements so we can hear their side of the story?
We have a very few non-disclosure agreements.
How many is
that? Let me finish.
How many is that?
None of them accuse me of doing anything other than maybe they didn't like the joke I told. And let me just put, there's agreements between two parties that wanted to keep it quiet, and that's up to them. They signed those agreements, and we'll live with it.
So wait, when you say it is up to, I just want to be clear. Some is how many? And when you say they signed them and they wanted them, if they wish now to speak out and tell their side of the story about what it is they allege, that's now okay with you? You're releasing them on television tonight?
Senator, no.
Is that right?
Senator, the company and somebody else, in this case, a man or a woman, or could be more than that, they decided when they made an agreement they wanted to keep it quiet for everybody's interest. They signed the agreements, and that's what we're going to live with.
I'm sorry. No, the question is, are the women bound by being muzzled by you? And you could release them from that immediately, because understand, this is not just a question of the mayor's character. This is also a question about electability. We are not going to beat Donald Trump with a man who has who knows how many non-disclosure agreements and the drip, drip, drip of stories of women saying they have been harassed and discriminated against. That's not what we do as Democrats.
Mr. Vice President.
More of last night's debate. That was Elizabeth Warren confronting former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg in last night's debate. So who do you think was the most powerful debater? Who was the best counterpuncher? If you're a Democrat, who would you like most to see take on Donald Trump? And if you're a Republican, which Democrat are you hoping, are you wishing, are you praying for wins the Democratic nomination? And who do you think would be easier to beat if you're a Republican favoring Donald Trump? 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org, and you're listening to 88.5 FM. James writes this, last night former Mayor Bloomberg implied non-disclosure agreements are consensual between two parties. They are not. Employees don't present an NDA for employers to sign. It's the other way around. And if the employee doesn't sign it, they don't work, writes Jim in St. Pete. Also, Jim says Mayor Pete stated he wanted to move beyond the status quo, but not go as far as to start a revolution. But what exists between the two? A little bit of revolution or a little less or more of the same, writes James. And Sarah writes this, a winner hands down. I switched from Elizabeth to Bernie, like Pete, but I am back to Team Warren. Warren was awesome, writes Sarah in Arcadia. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Richard in Tampa for our first phone call today. Hey, Richard, you're on MNF.
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Good.
I would like to see Bernie Sanders take on Trump. I mean, that's to address that issue. But I'm a little bit upset. None of the candidates addressed a huge concern and a huge problem, and I've talked about this many times on your show. There was a massacre in Vegas. All the people that were killed to do with the gun, the automatic weapons, and the gun violence, and none of the candidates addressed anything to do with gun violence or guns or taking on the NRA or stopping any of these types of problems we have in our country. So,
yeah, I think it didn't come up until the very end. I think it was Joe Biden at the very end brought it up in his closing statement. But you're right. During the course of the debate, it didn't come up in the main body of the debate.
So if one of these candidates is going to take on Trump, and they do win the presidency, I mean, how are they going to address that? I mean, I didn't hear anything. So I'm a little bit concerned about that.
And Richard, what would you like to see done about gun violence?
It has to be addressed at multiple levels. There's multiple.
Like what? But what would you do? What would you like to see done? You want a ban on assault weapons, or would you like the gun show loophole closed? What would you like to see done? Would you like to see ammunition and guns fingerprinted so that you can tell?
We need to bring in the stakeholders, and we need to make the stakeholders, all the stakeholders that are involved in the equation, accountable. Okay, and then you could address how to solve the problems. I mean, there's plenty of people that walk around with mental issues, okay? And I go to the VA, and I see people, and I talk to people all the time, and I've even gone out there for anger management counseling because I was in the military, and as I've gotten older, things have escalated to do with my anger and the way society is and everything and how I have to address my problem. I knew I had a problem years ago, but it got worse. Now, a lot of people like that are walking around in our society today, and they don't know how to address their problem. That's a major concern. So if they do supposedly have something, a tragedy happen in their life, and they go on tilt, you never know what's going to happen. And that's what you're seeing in our country today. Those types of people. I mean, you know, you could lose your job. Bingo. The next day, you could go off the deep end.
All right, Richard, thanks a lot. Thank you. Thank you for your call. All right, good to hear from you. Ron of West Tampa says, I could only watch half the debate. Bloomberg did not seem let me see if I can read this better. Bloomberg did not seem poised nor assertive, but reactionary. Everyone came on out swinging. And Ron goes on to say, I think Bernie Sanders looked poised, assertive, and consistent in his message. He'd do best against Trump and Bloomberg. Or he'd do best against Trump, and Bloomberg would not. He was too stiff and defensive, writes Ron in West Tampa. You know, the reason why I was having trouble reading that is somehow the print on our email has suddenly shrunk. I don't know if that's happened to you on your computer. The number to call, 813-239-9663. I want to let you know, too, that MNF is still way behind for the WMNF Winter Fund Drive, and we haven't yet made our goal yet. We're still probably $20,000 away from reaching our goal. And if you haven't yet made a contribution to MNF this year, we hope that you will. Please go to WMNF.org and make a contribution. One of the big questions in the Democratic Party is, can somebody who calls themselves a socialist or a democratic socialist, can they win the nomination, and can they win in November? That came up last night during the debate. Let's listen to that portion of the Democratic debate.
Let's talk about democratic socialism, not communism, Mr. Bloomberg. That's a cheap shot. Let's talk about democratic. Let's talk about what goes on in countries like Denmark, where Pete correctly pointed out they have a much higher quality of life in many respects than we do. What are we talking about? We are living in many ways in a socialist society right now. Problem is, as Dr. Martin Luther King reminded us, we have socialism for the very rich, rugged individualism for the poor.
Wait a second.
Let me finish. When Donald Trump gets $800 million in tax breaks and subsidies to build luxury condominiums, that's socialism for the rich. We have to subsidize Walmart's workers who are on Medicaid and food stamps because the wealthiest family in America pays starvation wages. That's socialism for the rich. I believe in democratic socialism working people, not billionaires. Health care for all. Educational opportunity for all.
Senator, thank you. Mayor Bloomberg,
a government that works for all.
What a wonderful country we have. The best known socialist in the country happens to be a millionaire with three houses. What I miss here?
Well, you'll miss that I work in Washington, House 1.
That's the first problem.
Live in Burlington, House 2.
That's good.
And like thousands of other Vermonters, I do have a sub-cap. Forgive me for that. But where is your home? Which tax haven have your home?
New York City, thank you very much, pay all my taxes. And I'm happy to do it because I get something for it. And let me say, I thought the senator next to me was half right. I agree we should raise taxes on the... No. I disagree with the senator on the wealth tax, but I do agree with her that the rich aren't paying their fair share. We should raise taxes on the rich. I did that as mayor in New York City. I raised taxes, and if you take a look at my plans, the first thing I would do is try to convince Congress, because they've got to do it, we can't just order it, to roll back the tax cuts that the Trump administration put in with through Congress.
All right, Vice President Biden, weigh in on this question of Americans' feeling about socialist candidates.
Well, look, let me weigh in on, you know, for 36 years and as vice president, I was listed as the poorest man in Congress. I made money when I wrote a book about my son, and it surprised me how much it sold. First time I ever made any money. And here's the deal. The fact is that we ought to start rewarding work, not just wealth. The idea that we have a tax rate for corporate America at 21% is ridiculous. It should be at 28%. That would raise almost $800 billion a year. The idea that we have companies not paying anything at all, they should have a minimum tax of 15%. That would raise another $740 billion a year. The idea that you're able to have a capital gains tax that you pay at the rate of 20% if you are Mike Bloomberg or whomever, it has a whole lot lot of money, and someone else is paying at a your staffer is paying at 25% is wrong. That would raise another $800 billion. We should be rewarding work, not just wealth. And the American people, the middle class is getting killed, and the poor have no way up.
Well, that was Joe Biden, Michael Bloomberg, and Bernie Sanders debating democratic socialism last night. On Twitter, Sanders is taking a lot of hits because he failed to mention that Bloomberg owns a pretty nice house in Bermuda, which is a tax haven. We heard a mention of that an hour ago on Democracy Now! I'm asking the question, who is the best debater? Who is the best counterpuncher? If you're a Democrat, who would you most like to see take on Donald Trump in the fall? And if you're a Republican, which Democrat would you most like Donald Trump to run against? 813-239-9663. Dennis from Oldsmar writes, I'm tired of these circular firing squads. I don't care about counterpunchers. It's time for the also-rans to step out of the way. I'm all in for Bernie, but I'm 100% behind whomever the Democrats put up for a ticket, even if it's the Melendez brothers, writes Dennis from Oldsmar. All right, there's Dennis, who would vote for killers. James writes this, I'm afraid the candidates are in a circular firing squad. That want to beat the Trump zombies, writes James. James, I hope I read that right. Let's go back to the phones. We can go to Rod in Pinellas Park. Hey, Rod, you're on MNF. What did you think of the debate last night?
Yeah, I think that some of what you were talking about the round fire and everybody shooting at mainly Bloomberg, it seemed like. That's no way to get things done up there, screaming at each other. I don't think they're going to get the voters out to it's gonna help them to get done what needs to be done. I know one thing, and I'm not, I like Bloomberg in as much as the fact that he's a self-made person. He wasn't handed anything like Trump, and he is a businessman. That's how he got to be where he is today. He did come from a middle-class family, and he started a business, and it was very successful. And I don't have a problem with that with people with money. The only time I have a problem with that is when you're somebody like Donald Trump who's had everything handed to him your whole life, and then you stand on a soapbox and tell me that you know what the working man goes through, because that doesn't work for me. That hypocrisy doesn't work for me. But I know Bernie, you know the whole thing about socialism. People realize, and whether they know it or not, we live in a fairly socialist country anyway. I mean, our fire department, our police departments, most of our community centers, all the stuff that we do are socialized. And I know the Republicans like that to use that word because of, United Soviet Socialist Republic. And if people equate that to that type of, which was communism, but it was social communism. So I don't understand how they get that confused, but the thing I didn't understand is, yeah, they were all throwing bombs at Bloomberg because of the amount of money that he's spending and because he's a billionaire. But in my opinion, if any of them had that same type of war chest, they probably would be doing the same thing. So at least he's not taking money from PACs. He has his own money. And Trump, yeah, he always, but that we know that that's all Trump said. That's not what he did. I think if enough people get out and vote, regardless of who ends up being the nominee, I like Bernie and some of his ideas. I think he goes a little too far on some things, but I don't think it has anything to do with socialism. I think
all right. Well, Rod, thanks a lot. A lot to think about there. Thank you very much for the phone call. All right, he hung up. Thank you, Rod. And let's go to Pat in Clearwater. Pat, you're on WMNF. What did you think of the debate last night?
Thanks for taking my call. I just kind of, I go to bed early. I watched recaps of it this morning. When you were asking about who would be best suited, or I'm a Republican, who would Republicans like to see face Trump? I would have to say Sanders. I have a lot of Democrat friends and very liberal friends. And matter of fact, a couple of them have talked to you in person. And, they kind of tell me the same thing, that Trump is very bad, but they're going to have to hold their nose and pull the lever for Bernie if he's nominated.
Pat, let me ask you this. Why is a Republican, would you like to run against Bernie? What makes him so easy
what
to beat?
What makes him beatable?
Exactly.
The same thing that happened, before what's going on is Bernie's very far left. He's not a centrist at all. And I think a lot of the Democrat Party's forgetting about the old blue dog, blue collar, factory working, pro-union Democrats that are not in there for support for Bernie because his policies are, they're not center left at all. They're very left. And there is a lot of blue dogs out there. I know a lot of blue dogs that voted for Trump.
When Bernie says that he always gets high marks from labor unions, he's been endorsed by labor unions forever, and that he wants to see wages better, he wants to see tough labor standards so people aren't getting injured on the job. But you don't think any of that matters to your friends who are blue collar?
You're talking right now about the unions worried about their health care. If we do go to Medicare for all,
yeah.
The unions are worried about it. Look what happened with Trump when he visited Obama, the Teamsters president.
Trump, the AFL-CIO president? Okay.
Yeah. When the Obamacare phased in and his constituents were very upset with him because it was affecting their very good union health care plan.
Yeah,
and
a lot of
the union members there were very upset over their health care.
Yeah. All right, Pat, thanks a lot. Thank you for the phone call.
Thank you.
All right, great to hear from you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. And Lelena writes, I think the biggest concern Americans should have was the answer to the last question when 5 of 6 candidates say they think it's fine for establishment elites to overrule the will of the people. Democracy is hanging by a thread. To me, that makes the choice crystal clear. Bernie has the people. Bernie has the money. Bernie has the compassion. Bernie is a true believer in democracy, writes Lelena. Terry writes this. He said, regarding the topics not discussed, I blame the moderators a lot for not asking the questions about Trump, gun laws, immigration, etc. It was hard for the candidates to answer the questions asked and then pivot to other thoughts and topics in a short amount of time, writes Terry. Let's go to John in St. Pete, who wants to talk about the debate last night. John, thanks for calling. What did you think of the debate?
Hi, Rob. I think Mayor Pete, to me, is the most focused one out of all of them. You could see he knows what he wants to say. He makes a ton of sense. He's not his jabs are real. He's not just like throwing slander out at people and stuff like that. I don't think he'll get the nomination, but I really think as far as the debate goes, he is definitely much more in control. I watched all of them, and they're all just trying to jump all over each other, and he's waiting his moment. I don't think it's going to happen for him. I think Bernie might get it, and I think that'll be a disaster for the Democrats.
All right, John, thanks. Thanks for your thoughts.
Okay.
All right, great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. I'm asking, who do you think was the best debater last night? Who was the best counterpuncher? If you're a Democrat, who would you most like to see take on Donald Trump in the fall? And if you're a Republican, which Democrat do you hope will win? Let's go to Fran in Largo. Hey, Fran, you're on M&F.
Oh, hi, Rob. Yes, I definitely like Bernie Sanders. One thing I wanted to say was, how do you respond to people that say, Bernie Sanders is a communist? I mean, I get so sick of that. It's so stupid.
Now, Bernie Sanders last night said to Bloomberg, that's a cheap shot because that's not. And then he goes on to, he was talking about European countries like Denmark as a model for what he envisions. That's the way he handled that last night at the debate.
This, This was somebody that didn't even watch the debates when I said I like Bernie Sanders. I mean, is it enough to say that, think about Franklin Roosevelt and all he did for this country. Think about the fire department, that socialism, without, you know, you have to pay for your own fire department. We're not the villages where they can pay for all that stuff, where they have a lot of money. That's what I heard about the villages anyways, that they can afford their own fire department and everything. But, I mean, it's just so, I get tired of hearing it. It's a mindset. People, they've got to change their minds about this. And the regular established media, like Channel or NBC last night, they just don't get it, do they? They just do not get it. So, anyways, that's all I wanted to add.
Okay, Fran, thank you. Good to hear from you. Jason writes this: my comments about the debate, I did not hear one word about the wars in Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, or our military presence all over the world from in 700 to 900 overseas bases. I guess being constantly at war doesn't matter, right? Did not the Democrats vote for Trump's additional $70 billion for the defense budget? Exactly how does spending $770 billion on the military not affect everything else we need to fund, from healthcare to infrastructure, writes Jason. Let's go to Dan in St. Pete for more comments about last night's debate. Hi, Dan. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, I couldn't catch the debate. National Public Radio didn't have it on the air. At least that's how, at least when I was listening, I couldn't catch it. So I'm hearing just 20 minutes of what you're talking about here. And if it comes down to Trump and Sanders, oh, my God. I mean, what terrible.
And which one, if you had to choose one of them, which would you choose?
I don't know. I'd have to see what Trump does the next, what more data comes out. When I was listening to National Public Radio and Deutsche Bank, they had a great story about, you know, Trump and the bank and all the shenanigans that went on. And that new book just came out.
You're talking about the Fresh Air interview yesterday. Yeah, that was a great interview. Yeah.
And I caught that between 8 and 9. So, you know, I don't know if I can hold my nose and vote for Trump, but I think Donald's doing a pretty good job in a lot of areas.
All right, so it may come down to if you hold your nose and vote, you're going to vote for Trump if it's Trump versus Sanders.
Unless the more data comes out, you know, that I just can't stomach.
Okay. All right, Dan in St. Pete, thanks a lot. All right, good to hear from you. Deborah in Spring Hill says, the problem is a far-left president wouldn't get any cooperation from a Republican Congress, so nothing will get done. Democrats need to learn that they need to turn out for midterm elections to elect a Democratic Congress if they want to truly enact a leftist agenda, writes Deborah. And she goes on to say, having said that, I think Elizabeth Warren showed last night that she is the warrior to beat Trump, writes Deborah in Spring Hill. Deborah, thank you for that. 813-239-9663. And then Michael writes this, Warren in 2020. And Michael goes on to say she's intelligent, measured, and has produced consumer protection. Sanders' position on the convention was the opposite in 2016, writes Michael. Michael, thank you for your thoughts. And let's go to Don in Largo. Don, we just have 30 seconds. What would you like to say?
I like Klobuchar because what Buttigieg said about what she said is she's been there. She's done all phases of government, not just on the local level. She's a member of the woman majority, and the Buttigieg as her vice president. He's a member of the homosexual community. They'd have two groups that would be campaigning for them. That's all.
All right, Don. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your thoughts. Hey, thanks to Bill Grace. He's been our phone producer today. Bill, thank you for fielding the phone calls. If you want to comment about today's program, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks a lot for listening to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. And remember, MNF ended its fund drive last week, and we didn't quite reach our goal, and we're hoping to reach it sometime this week. We're still about $1,000 down for the public affairs on Thursday here on WMNF. And thanks to Sandy in Holmes Beach, who just made a contribution online. Thank you very much. And This is a donation in lieu of flowers for a dear friend, Robin, who passed away last week. So, Sandy, thank you for that. If you want to make a contribution to WMNF, there's two easy ways to do it. One is you can call us at our main number, 813-238-8001, and just make a donation over the phone. Or you can make one online at WMNF.org. That's WMNF.org. Well, stay tuned for the Surly Feminists, who are coming up next on the Midpoint program. This is 88.5 FM, WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg. Here's the latest news from